Welcome back to Transform, a podcast highlighting the people and ideas shaping the future of senior living. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. On today's episode, I spoke with BezTech Executive Vice President of Senior Living, Jason Kohler. The Farmington Hills, Michigan-based property management and senior living operator operates 9 senior living communities. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to first highlight 2 upcoming events for Senior Housing News, including the Brain Memory Care event on May 16th and the Dished Culinary event on May 17th in Chicago. Visit seniorhousingnews.com/events to learn more. BezTech plans to grow its senior living platform in 2024 with scheduled renovations to multiple communities, along with plans for a new build project. The company continues to build out its senior living portfolio. Kohler believes BezTech can grow its main senior living brands, All Seasons and Monarch Grove, through improving senior living sales with data, while also regaining occupancy and adhering to expense control measures.
Outside of this organic growth, right now we're just solely focused on occupancy development with our continuing operations and also expense control.
Now, here's my interview with BezTech Executive Vice President of Senior Living, Jason Kohler. Jason, thank you so much for joining us here on Transform.
Hi, well, thank you for having me. I appreciate the invite. I'm excited to be here today.
Yeah, we're really excited to have a deep dive. For those who might not be familiar with BezTech, you want to just give us a broad summary of the company's senior living portfolio and just kind of a 30,000-foot view so we can kind of understand the organization for people who might not be familiar.
Sure. Yeah, happy to do so. I'll start first with just a company overview, because I think in the senior living space, the name BezTech isn't probably widely recognized, but kind of for a reason. So we're a family-owned and operated company at this point, I guess a third-generation company, started 70 years ago. In the commercial office space, multifamily apartment space, et cetera. So it's actually a sizable company. Our footprint in senior living isn't as big as it is in multifamily, but it's we're a vertically integrated company. We do site acquisition and ground up development. We do management, of course, ongoing operations. We do some third party management, particularly on the multifamily side. But, it's a fairly sizable company with different divisions in commercial retail office space than multifamily. And of course, senior housing. And I oversee our senior housing division for the company. We've been in senior housing for probably 15 years or so. And our portfolio right now consists of really 2 brands, All Seasons brand and Monarch Grove. And a relatively small portfolio, I guess, in comparison to some of the big behemoth senior living operators out there. We're at 9 communities right now, soon to be 10. And we're doing some additions onto a couple of our communities that are really exciting. So, growing, but small and mighty, as I say.
Yeah, we definitely, and I think that's what the sense that at least I gained coming out of the sales and marketing summit that you had spoken at, which we really enjoyed. I think there's a lot to be said right now. You don't necessarily have to be like you had mentioned, a behemoth operator to really have success, because we think there is so much opportunity right now across the industry. And I think it really, it comes down to the people you have in place and also your operational goals for determining whether or not you can have success in your specific markets. Because I think we're starting to really see some momentum. Do you want to just maybe mention just what you're looking to execute on in 2024? How are you starting out the year? What's your general sense of just how the year's going from an operations perspective? You want to just maybe highlight from a high level what some of the priorities you're looking to execute on the senior living side of things?
Sure. Outside of development, which we hope to get a community out of the ground this year, we've got a 24 unit addition onto our All Seasons Birmingham community. It's 24 luxury apartments in downtown Birmingham, Michigan, which is really exciting. And we also hope to break ground and get going on our expansion at our Ann Arbor campus, where currently we've got 200 luxury IL apartments. And we look to add assisted living, 80 units of assisted living there. So outside of, you know, this organic growth, right now we're just solely focused on occupancy development with our continuing operations and also expense control, which is probably the same, right, across the industry. Those are just two key performance goals for us, is to grow that occupancy and control those expenses. I mean, we are laser focused on that this year. And so far out of the gate, we're doing well. Rental income year over year is up 19.8%, somewhere in that. Yeah, which is amazing. And then we're on target for total income year to date as well. So I think our efforts in the occupancy arena are paying dividends. And then, you know, expense control is also going well. I don't have March numbers just yet. I had March revenue numbers, so I figured I'd share that a little bit. But yeah, so I think coming out of last year, 2023, and into January, we had, you know, some unexpected staffing labor, you know, that trickled into January, you know, with timing of payrolls. And so you've got a lot of PTO time off, overtime, holiday pay, things like that, that crept into January, which impacted our January expense numbers. But we were on track for February, and we look to be on track for March. So our expense control measures are hitting the mark.
And I think, obviously, occupancy and expense control, I think I almost view those, at least in the last 18 months, as kind of the two sidelines of the playing field for operators. So really, those are the areas where I think you really can make improvements on and start to see some pressures alleviate on the operations side, just because you're kind of resetting everything to where you should be in going forward. I know you mentioned a little bit about some, I don't want to call it bite size. We'll call it right size development, for being able to kind of keep taking small bites of that apple in such a tough climate. Because I think operators really have either stayed completely away and mothballed what they're doing on development, or taken smaller approaches in ways that are more manageable. Whether that's, like you mentioned, through new development or the addition of CapEx spends on to existing communities. I think those are kind of the two areas we're really seeing that. So maybe just as a follow-up, do you want to outline your strategy when you're thinking about that development push, why you wanted to continue that? Is it to capture a future demand and be ready for that demand, to be kind of ahead of that supply curve that we all have seen the NIC numbers? We know that supply is going to be needed. Would love to know, just from a high level, your view on the philosophy of why continue with even moderate development right now.
Yeah, like all of the industry, it's just, these are micro markets, right? And so I think we're just looking to maximize our current assets in the markets and where they are, right? So Birmingham, Michigan, as an example, our community there is 95%+ occupied, strong rental rates, solid team, amazing leadership team at that community. Just award-winning community and team there. They're knocking it out of the park. Couldn't be happier. If we've got the ability, why not add, right, 24 new luxury apartment homes, right? And capitalize on that. So I think we're looking at some of those, you know, what might be seen as smaller opportunities, just to strengthen what you already have, versus, you know, grow outwardly. And for us, it's not about number of communities. It's not about number of units under management. It's not about chasing a top 10 or top 50 designation or anything like that. It's really more so about going a mile deep versus a mile wide. And you know, we have great communities, love our communities, amazing communities in good markets. How do we make them better and better and better every year? And we focus on that. Not saying that we're not looking to grow at all. I mean, we're looking to do a new development in Florida. And we're always looking at opportunities. You know, a lot of, as we know right now with the climate, there's a lot of opportunities that come across all of our desks, right? And of course, we say no to 99.8% of those, but for a reason. It's, Do we have the bandwidth? Is it something that we really want to own? Is it something that we really want to operate? Is it in the right market? Can we support and service that well? You know, if we have hesitancy on any of those fronts or even more, the answer is no. And that really tends to have us look inward a lot more as to what do we have and how do we improve what we have. And so that's a focus for us this year, is improving what we have and doing some of these additions to the communities that I think will strengthen them in the marketplace.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head of just being able to highlight why it's important to continue at least a steady pace of what growth could look like right now in the senior living industry. And I think you're on that trajectory. I know you mentioned some success in year over year numbers. Do you want to just highlight any occupancy successes you've had? Obviously, I know you probably don't have March numbers yet, just because we're almost to the end of the month, but we haven't quite crossed that threshold into April yet. But just what are you feeling on occupancy? What's your general sense of how the last 3 months have been? I think overall, from a high level, the industry has seen some pretty steady occupancy improvement, at least for operators that have been well positioned and able to kind of continue on their journey rather than have to face going up for sale or something of that nature. So just on an occupancy journey from your end, how have the last 3 months gone? Where do you see occupancy headed more broadly this year?
It's gone very well thus far. I think we're quite pleased with what we've seen. I know there's been a lift in the industry. We've experienced that lift. I do think we've put in a lot of work and effort to position ourselves to capitalize on that through platforms and processes and sales training and getting the right talent in the right seats, et cetera. So we're seeing the fruits of our labor, and also I think we're riding that trend a little bit in the industry as well. I think construction slowing down a little bit is helpful. I think, you know, we'll all benefit from that in the industry. You know, individually, all of our communities have made occupancy gains with one exception. And that exception is, you know, they're relatively flat, and that is a market issue. And that's, you know, a flood of inventory has come into a relatively small market in a short period of time. Over the last 5 years, you know, 5+ communities have been developed in this market. It's, wow. It's, you know, so it's kind of a dogfight over there, but other than that, we're winning, and I like where it's going, and I feel really, really good about our team, and I'm very optimistic about where the industry is heading here, especially in the near term, you know, over the right. next, you know, handful of years. I'm bullish.
That's wonderful to hear. I'm glad to see you're having some success. It's been nice in the last 18 months to start to report on more of the positives of what's happening in the industry than necessarily all the challenges that are taking place. Important to talk about the challenges, but I think encouraging for everyone to hear some of the successes that have been happening as well. Would love to know, now just shifting to look at BezTech, and we can talk about the All Seasons brand, and then I want to also touch on Monarch Grove. Do you want to just talk about how you view the All Seasons brand and how it's evolved in the last 4 years? And then if you obviously want to transition, also talk about Monarch Grove. Would love to know, just from your perspective, in the journey over the last 4 years, how do you think the brands have really started to grow and really take shape?
Yeah, our All Seasons brand is really the brainchild of our partners of creating, you know, a community and environment that they would desire to live in, which is just an amazing, great perspective to have, right? And so very forward thinking, you know, we really focus on dining and programming as well as customer service. And we'll talk a little bit about, hopefully about, you know, resident satisfaction as well.
Yes.
But we really hang our hat on dining and programming. And I know a lot of companies say that, but you know, I think that we are firmly committed to providing an amazing dining experience. We all know it's the highlight of every resident's day, right? Is that dining experience. And it's a challenge, right? Every day is a challenge in dining, because you're really serving the same, you know, residents day after day, right? And you've got to make it new and interesting and stuff. And so we mix it up a lot in our dining program. And, you know, do a lot of action stations and chef specials, and we're constantly changing the menu and bringing vegetarian items and all these other, you know, and theme menus. And so we really try to go over the top with our dining experience and dining experience, not only the food and the plate presentation, but also the service and the full liquor bar and the multiple venues to dine in. And, you know, so we place a lot of emphasis on dining, place a tremendous amount of emphasis on programming as well. We have a corporate director of intellectual and artistic planning. Yes, I remembered her title in its in its entirety. She's an amazing theater background. Really puts on spectacular events and programming, and bringing, you know, world class musicians and you know, plays and theater to our communities. And we, you know, live stream those to our other properties. And we have, you know, just gorgeous Bösendorfer pianos available and stages with auditoriums. And it's really like unbelievable, you know, artists in residence program, the list goes on and on and on. And it really does separate us though, because if someone is interested in pottery, art, improv, you know, classical music, all these different types of musical, we have something to offer. And we put our money where our mouth is there. If we're really going to hang our hat on that and feel like we're going to be an industry leader in those aspects, then, you know, the resources have to be there, and our partners are unwavering and amazing at allowing us to spend what we need to spend, hire who we need to hire, and make it amazing. And so, you know, that's All Seasons in a nutshell is obviously upscale, more luxury offering. It's mostly independent living in our communities. We do have a couple of communities with independent, assisted, and memory care. But they're just amazing properties. And I can't thank, you know, the ownership enough for creating beautiful communities and having healthy budgets to really deliver an exceptional experience. So on that, let's I want to talk a little bit about resident satisfaction, because I'm so proud of our teams and our communities and what they've been able to deliver. So, you know, this last year, of course, all of our All Seasons communities were recognized as U.S. News and World Report Best Senior Living Communities. But then more recently, Kingsley, so there's Grace Hill that they do all of these resident satisfaction surveys, and it's an independent third party that does these. And every year they, you know, recognize their top 100, and they issue Kingsley Excellence Awards for resident satisfaction. And I just couldn't be prouder that all of the All Seasons communities were recognized as Kingsley Excellence Award winners for resident satisfaction. And our All Seasons Birmingham community won first place in the entire nation. And I mean, it's just a tribute to that team, and, you know, to the partners and what we've created. It's just amazing. So
that's wonderful.
So I wanted to mention that as well. You know, it goes a long way when you can, you know, really hang your hat on your reputation as well. It's very helpful.
Yeah. And I think we'll talk about it here just shortly. It probably lays the groundwork needed to not only have the operational success, but it takes the right team to be able to execute on all these different goals. And I know we had some insights from you earlier this month at our Sales and Marketing Summit, which we thought were wonderful. And I think that's a great way to kind of pivot into talking about staffing. So do you want to maybe just talk about what aspects of the sales and marketing process have evolved since the pandemic, and which you feel like have had the most influence going forward? I know, obviously, you have a very unique approach to analyzing and using data when you're thinking about supporting your staff, and we'll get to that in a minute. But I think a good starting off point on staffing would be to just talk about the sales and marketing side, about how you're able to communicate all this value to future residents and to demonstrate to your market areas what really BezTech has to offer when you're thinking about a senior living product. So you want to maybe just highlight in the last 4 years what areas you think will have evolved, but also what ways you think they might shape and have the most influence going forward.
Sure. I think that the pandemic really pushed forward, your online presence, right, in virtual tours. And, you know, you had no choice. So if you're going to tour someone, it was going to be virtual for a little while. So, but that was good. That was a good nudge. You know, we needed that. So virtual tours, Matterports, having the ability to be on the website and do a self-guided tour. I think that is here to stay, obviously. And there's money well spent. We've got a lot of data behind that on our Matterports and, you know, how many views and the duration of those views and conversions from those views, et cetera. So I think that's a worthwhile investment and that's here to stay. Home visits, you know, once we got past the really scary part with the pandemic, home visits became increasingly important because, you know, if people didn't want to come to us, then doggone it, we were going to come to them, right? And I think that's here to stay too. That has been a home visit conversion ratio is much higher when you can be invited to their home, be on their turf. There's just a comfort level that comes with that, and it also, you know, exemplifies trust, right, that they have in you. And I think that's a real bridge builder, and so many insights can be gleaned by those home visits from those home visits. And yeah, that translates into a you know, higher conversion, you know, move-ins. So I think that's here to stay. I think, and that's something that we continue to emphasize, but then, you know, at the beginning, I kind of mentioned that website and that digital footprint, the pandemic, you know, caused us all, I think, to take a look at how are we presenting ourselves online? What's our online reputation? How's our website look? You know, is it easy to navigate? Do we have calls to action? Do we have lead captured? You know, what's our follow-up look like from a digital follow-up standpoint, and phone outs, et cetera. None of that is going away. I think that it's more important now than ever, even, you know, in the beginning of the pandemic. So a lot of leads come through from digital assets, social media, website, et cetera. That's certainly not going to change. That's the way people are searching for senior living. And so someone at the conference, and I wish I forgive me for not remembering who said this, but it was brilliant. It was basically, you know, your online presence, your website is your curb appeal, right? It's the new curb appeal. It really is. And I took that to heart. And it caused me to go back and reevaluate our websites and sit down with my digital marketing manager and say, how do we make this even better? Right? I was just motivated by that statement. It's like, how do we make this better? We need the best, you know, online curb appeal we could possibly have, you know, and that was motivating. So, and who said that was spot on. That's not at all changing. So,
well, I appreciate the insights there. And I think it kind of gets to the broader picture of just how things are starting to evolve more so than ever before in terms of a digital front door, if you will, for operators to really think about that. And I think we always kind of give the senior living industry a harder time about being maybe a few years behind some other industries in the sense of some of the ways that they're using sales and marketing and using digital marketing specifically. But I think, like you said, that necessity of the last 4 years had really driven that growth. And so it's great to see that. I want to before we have about just under 10 minutes left in our conversation, I really want to highlight how BezTech uses behavioral data and coaching to improve sales staff, because we thought that the way you had kind of outlined that was a great way to highlight how you operationally from an executive level can support your teams and to help make them better and to improve their day-to-day work routine. So in terms of how you use data, can you just give us some insight there and walk us through, so obviously without giving away the secrets, walk us through some of the things that you're really looking at when you're looking at this behavioral and coaching data?
Sure. Yeah. And I don't mind giving away secrets. I'm an open book. And, you know, the difference is what do you do with it, right? If, and you know, listen, I've heard a lot of secrets in my career, and I haven't acted on several of them. So, you know, shame on me, you know, but I'm happy to share. And who acts on it, great. Maybe they'll be a little bit ahead. But so I think what you're referring to is probably my maybe controversial stance at the conference on empathy. And that was, wow, I didn't expect the feedback that I got from some of those statements. All positive. I mean, really good feedback and constructive, you know, like really good conversations came about afterward, which was awesome. I mean, right. You know, it's like, well, people really listened and they were inquisitive, and the follow-up has been tremendous from that. So, you know, so going to, you know, empathy, I think we all agree that it's important that our sales team members have empathy, right? It helps build rapport and trust, and it is really helpful to understand what someone is going through, where they are, and try to meet them where they are, right? And you can do that through exercising empathy. And the question that came up at the conference was, is empathy innate basically, or can it be learned? And I think I took the controversial stance that it could be learned. And the reason why I took the stance was really because of the medical profession. And I shared a little bit of history at the conference on that. I won't go into it now, but there's some history there with me in that. You know, it is something that has to be taught, because the more medical training that one is given, the less empathy they seem to exhibit. And this has, you know, been in a bunch of academic journals and stuff. So the question is, you know, can it be taught? And there's science that's proven that yes, it can be taught, but it's really, you know, so let's dive into the heart of it. It's really through didactic learning, like constructivist teaching, and meaning that, let me give you an example of how we do that. Okay. So when we give everyone a behavioral assessment, personality assessment, and it's called Real Strengths, and everyone can look it up. It's 10 minutes to take, and it'll basically give you three different things. It'll give you your selling style, your communication style, and your serving strength. And what we really look at is selling style, because what we found is that our most successful salespeople are motivators versus facilitators. And motivators just meaning that they take more of an influencer approach to selling, right? Where facilitator is really helping someone along that journey, and they go at their own pace, and you know, it's not necessarily motivational and moving them forward. There's a lot of continuation that happens with facilitators. And so that sales process, that gestation period from inquiry to tour can be extremely long with a facilitator, where motivators, you know, are motivated, right? They're motivated to influence and move the sale forward, et cetera. And so motivators, though, by nature, are not highly empathetic. And we know empathy is important. And so what we do is we try to take motivator selling styles and have them work on their empathy. And so going back to the didactic learning methods, it's listening to the phone calls, it's shadowing on the tours, and then it's debriefing afterward and asking really deep questions on what the person heard, and then having them put themselves in their shoes. How do you think that they feel? What do you think they might be going through? What do you think some of the struggles that they're having are? How do you think that their family feels? So you're asking all of these kind of deeper questions to your sales team members, right? To have them really put themselves in that person's shoes. And it's very, very helpful. So role-playing, too, is another method of doing this. And so what they found through all this research is that if it's just one-directional, right, if I'm just telling you how to be empathetic, it doesn't have nearly the benefit as if I role-play with you and I ask you deep, open-ended questions where you have to respond putting yourself in that person's shoes. So that's what we try to do in our training, and that's really kind of the root of our person-centered selling approach, is it is empathy. But what we look for in salespeople is motivators and competitors and et cetera. So I could go on about what we look for, but that's it in a nutshell.
I appreciate that, because I think it lends itself to showing how there's a really delicate balance between having the right people in place, but also making sure they have the right tools around them to be executing on all the goals that you're really looking to to succeed in when you're talking with prospects, because as we know, the sales cycle has, I think, elongated and become longer in the last 4 years. And so being able to have a really concrete approach has been, at least from our perspective, one of the reasons we were interested in chatting with BizTech, because I think there's a lot to be said about using data to support staff. And when you take another step back, one last staffing question, and then we'll have a forward-looking question on your outlook. But when you're thinking about operations staff and staffing in general for 2024, what are you really looking at on staffing? Where are you seeing some improvement? Where are still challenges? Would love to know, just for 2024, what's on your mind for staffing?
Improvement across the board, as far as in comparison, right, to 2022, 2023. I think in 2023, we were very fortunate. It wasn't luck, right? It's a lot of hard work, but we eliminated temp agency across the portfolio in 2023. So, you know, we're excited about that. We put a lot of time and effort into doing so. We did make, you know, wage adjustments, approached our recruiting, training, onboarding a little differently. Made a concerted effort to eliminate temp agency in the communities that we had it. That's our goal, is to keep that out in 2024. And to do that, you know, we have to make sure that we're being proactive with filling the positions. Right now, knock on wood, we're in a really good position. You know, we've got a really good team of executive directors. We have a great team of department directors at all of our communities. We're not struggling necessarily in any one area, which, you know, we couldn't say that over the last couple of years. So I think we're in a really good position, but we're not taking that, you know, like we're not thinking that, oh, we're good, we're out of the woods, right? I think now it's how do we stay where we are? And so it's more about maintaining, but not passively maintaining. It's really about proactive approach to maintaining what we have right now. So, you know, constantly looking at wages, benefits, the recruiting, how we're recruiting, how those ads are worded, who we're looking for, kind of going back to the sales, you know, conversation that we had about sales team members, who we're looking for executive directors. We know that the EDs, it starts, ends, and everything in between with the ED. If you've got, everyone knows this, but if you've got a roster of the best talent, most talented executive directors that have an ownership mentality, know the business, are passionate about the company, the community, the residents, you've got 85% of your problems licked right there, right? So we're really placing a lot of emphasis there. Like, do we have the right EDs? Do we have the right sales team members? Do we have the right department directors? Do they lead the way that we want them to lead? Are they on board? Are they engaged? Are they knowledgeable? What more training support can we provide to them to make them the best that they can be? Investing in that area is priceless, because the stuff that I mentioned earlier about resident satisfaction would never happen without those team members being in place and really caring about what they do and taking an ownership and approach to it.
Well, we know there's a lot of momentum, and it sounds like there's a lot of great opportunity ahead for BizTech. When you're thinking about this year, last question, and we'll get you out of here. When you're thinking about 2024 and your outlook for the industry, what are you thinking about from a high level? When you're talking to your peers, what are you seeing out there? What are your thoughts on just how you think your outlook is being shaped for 2024?
Yeah, it's a big question, because, you know, I don't know how to, do I dive into the capital markets and interest right. rates, or do I dive into, you know, construction, or, you know, I think that there's gonna, we've seen a lot of, you know, upheaval may be a strong word, but we've seen a bit of that, right, over the last couple of years. I think we're going to see some more of that here in the next couple of years before things kind of, you know, settle down. I don't think that, you know, I don't think that there's, that's necessarily a bad thing. I think that, you know, it would be nice to have a little bit of, you know, slowing construction, right? And, you know, there's a lot of communities out there with inventory, and we all know the demographics are in our favor. But if we outbuild, you know, the pace of absorption, it's not good for any of us. And so I think it'll be good if that, you know, that's, we're seeing some slowing there. I think that'll be good. Obviously, it'll be good if the Fed does reduce rates this year, as, you know, we're all anticipating. We know there's a lot of, you know, workout situations with, you know, some owners and operators, and I want them to be successful, because I, you know, it's when you see upheaval, you see turmoil, you see bankruptcies, you see a bunch of change in management companies and operating companies shutting down, like we've seen, that's not good for any of us. It's, you know, I've been in this business for over 20 years now. It's my career. It's my passion. It's, you know, it's what I do. I want to see us all succeed. I want us, you know, I want Senior Living to have a impeccable reputation, and rising tide lifts all boats, right? So that's what I want. Now, what do I think will happen? You know, there'll be some more shakeout over the next several months, but I do hope that it settles down. I love occupancy growth across the industry. I love to see, you know, the NIC stats that, hey, we're all moving kind of in the right direction. And so I said earlier on, I'm bullish. I am, and I'm an optimist by nature. So I'm just super excited about 2024.
Well, Jason, thank you so much for joining us here on Transform.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. It was my pleasure.
That does it for this episode of Transform. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. Thanks for listening.